This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on remote with Kathy Haley, who teaches in the master's program at Johns Hopkins University, teaching writing. So right away, we'd like to hear some of your own writing, Kathy.
Thank you. I'll start with a poem from my recently published chapbook, I'd Rather Be a Hyacinth. And this is the poem that includes the title of the book. It also sort of introduces the theme of today's writing, which is focused on mothers and daughters and grandmothers. In life, hyacinth, purple, baby blooms adding stress, weight, instinct maternal. Tulips variegate, orange, yellow, dancing coy above troops of green. Singular pride, joy, even with no breeze. In life, I'd rather be a hyacinth, embrace the role of mother, live the labyrinth, loved by a brood of florets, berry center of orbits.
Kathy Haley, if anyone is, you are. And I would hear a little bit more from this book. We can tell the theme is floral. So what's the title and what is in the book?
So the title is I'd Rather Be a Hyacinth, and this is the cover. And this is from a collage I made after cutting out photographs that I took in the garden, basically. And so I created this collage.
I forgot you were a photographer.
And this, well, I'm a you know, beginning photographer, but I've spent a lot more time taking photos since retirement. Well, since my official retirement after 40 years of teaching high school and middle school English and creative writing. So it also gave me a chance to spend more time in the garden and in the outdoors. And so that's how I've kind of matched up the photography and the writing.
Give us two more from this.
Okay. So this book also includes poems that were inspired by Moscow Festival Ballet, short episodes in ballet, excerpts from larger ballets. And these are ekphrastic poems, but inspired by dance as opposed to what most people do, which is, you know, visual arts. And so this one, and I'm going to read two together that are both romance related. Okay,
do
so
you
this
think
one is the ballet, and the second one is about my mother.
Excuse me for interrupting. Do you think that people know what ekphrastic is?
Oh, maybe not. So ekphrastic writing is writing that is inspired by someone else's art. And most people with visual arts, but there are, you can also write ekphrastically about music or dance or any other art. So this is Coquettes after Pas de Quatre, the name of the dance. Just off the shoulders, ruffled sleeves, deep sweetheart necks, posed in white layers, four dancers connect in floral celebration, sensuality, frenzied flirtation. Grace's natural gaiety of white butterflies, artists on trapeze. Nature's true passions arrives on billowing breeze. Heliotropic flowers pose as sensual powers. So when I first put this book, the very first version of this book, all of the ballet poems were in a section together, but later they were intermingled thematically. So the poem that follows is still about romance, but also about my mother. Romance remembered. Tea kettle whistles, inviting afternoon tea. Mom reminisces. Youth in New Jersey. Single life in Manhattan. Greek circle dancing. Wedding in satin. Jitterbug swing, enhancing island honeymoon. Romance for hours. Alexa playing her tunes, crooning their amours. She reminds me to write all before she cannot recall.
I love that one, Kathy. It's a whole biography in tiny little couplets. It is your whole portrait of your mother's life, even to the satin gown. That is Amazing. That's what poetry is supposed to do. I want them to know that we mentioned that you did teach high school English and creative writing in Prince William County, Virginia for like 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, 40 years.
Yeah. And my granddaughter had you, and you were the most beautiful mentor. I visited your class.
Yes.
And I saw what went on. And from that moment, we bonded immediately. And I've known you ever since. So this is a pleasure to present you to the world. And you have been a preeminent figure in Virginia, running everything from the Poetry Society of Virginia, Poetry Society of America's region. We will get into all your activities, but I want to go back to your poetry. So let's have a station break of poetry first.
All right. So those poems were haiku sonnets, so a very specific form. But now I'm going to read some poems that are in either free verse or other forms. And the first one is a ghazal or ghazal in Arabic, I believe. And it's going to introduce poetry about my daughter. My daughter died in a car accident when she was 26. And it's really poetry and nature and writing about memories that's gotten me through this time. It's been over 5 years now. And in fact, this year, I'm also helping to bring a book of hers to life through Finishing Line Press. So we might get a chance to read one poem from that at the end. But this is a poem that gives you a little bit of a portrait of my daughter, Alexandra, because in a ghazal, the different stanzas are like separate images. And here, they're separate images from photography. This is called Her Likeness. A carefree beachcomber at 16, beaming sea and sky's azure hue, daughter. Breeze breaking surf, blowing sand into drifts, rustling long hair askew, daughter. Black dress elegance, short hair accentuating chiseled cheekbones, spirited smile. A closer look, chewing gum gripped between back teeth, youth's residue, daughter. Shoulders bare, a dancer's playful pose, lavished in light, sleek body breaks into song, elegant ballet, improvisational jazz, joyful tap, graceful soft shoe, daughter. Side by side in Polaroid, orange sliced smiles, more depth in hers, dimples in mine. Sun-washed locks commingle, foreheads touch. Cherished, pas de deux, daughter. Warm embrace, relief after her late arrival. Fear waning through my lips, won't smile. My arms won't release her, my eyes sad. Loss on the horizon, as if I knew, daughter.
We have to emphasize that a ghazal, I know I'm not pronouncing it right, is a ghazal, is one where we repeat a word at the end of the line, as you heard. And the powerful thing is that we are evoking a person without even using that person's name. So was that, what did you have to overcome to write that?
Well, it was a few years later. Actually, the next poem I'm going to read is the first poem I wrote after she died. But that one took me a few years. It happened kind of organically because I would look at these photos that are scattered around the house, you know, every day. And so when I started to describe one, after that, it just flowed because they're constant images that I see.
Well, that's a lesson in writing right there. So continue on. We're dedicating this program to Alexandra.
So this poem is called Road Trips. The original version I wrote in a workshop that one of my students was leading for her Gold Award in Girl Scouts. And somehow it was a breakthrough moment. I, you know, had been writing some, you know, journal entries, but I had not written poetry about her. And when I was in this workshop, because it's my nature to try to write with my students when they're leading a writing exercise, I was able to turn something out that was the first draft. And then later, Mike Maggio has those challenges for the 30 for 30 in April. And he gave us a list of things we had to do to revise a poem that were quite challenging, but it really helped me develop this poem, which now has two parts. Road trips. And in it, we're following along in video that Alexandra captured. So, road trips. One, in Big Stone Gap, Virginia. A summer traveler, our daughter navigates a verdant path in southern Appalachia, driving toward an elusive destination, a new client's residence on Little Stone Mountain. Timber trunks and branches reach to connect, forming a natural tunnel, a lush canopy cocooning her for us, an embrace warmed by a tapestry of dappled sunlight. Inspired by artistic energy, she stops to capture moments on camera, images blurred by glare on windshield glass, captioned by meandering words we read as poetic lines. Two, after Paducah, Kentucky. We travel along by video, witnessing sunlight's ray envelop you as canopy leaves retract, admiring your spirit of adventure, your fascination with freedom on rustic roads. We follow your photographic journey from Virginia to Kentucky, springboards for provocative verse and fluorescent brush strokes destined for blacklight galleries, unrealized. We imagine sunlight replacing rain, stoplights cleared of unruly branches, our arms reaching around you, protection still possible, if not for crumbled windshield glass on a stormy afternoon.
Never self-pity, just clear imagery which brings forth something and makes it permanent forever. I knew her, and she was the most amazing person I've ever met. Artist, poet, dancer, the consummate artist. So it's right and precious that she should be made permanent in language. And you're giving us almost lessons in how to write when you talk about organizing it geographically or photographically. These are all lessons that people can take from. But continue on with this journey because we're getting to know her.
Thank you. And as you heard in that poem, she died in Paducah, Kentucky while she was on a business trip. So that relates a little bit to this poem, which is called Searching the Sky. I wrote this poem using some pieces of poetry that I had previously written for Zaina Azam, the poet laureate of Alexandria's moon reading in 2023. She had another one.
Say more about
that. So she invited people to read about the moon, poems they'd written or poems that were written by others, and to read in multiple languages. So I read this poem, but I also read a poem I memorized when I was a little girl that was in Greek called Fengeraki Moulambro. I won't do that one now.
Oh, please. Please.
About just a couple of lines. Fenge raki mulambro, fenge muna perpato, napieno stos filio, namateno gramata.
Okay, we'll go now to our native language.
Okay, searching the sky. You must be a shooting star, startling still stars around you, captivating earthbound beings, our eyes gazing upwards in awe, in pursuit of relief from loneliness, sadness, emptiness, and grief. Staying motionless in the night sky was never your style. You defied nature, flying through worldliness, always reaching higher, the moon in your sights, guiding your creative spirit as you winked at time, speeding ahead. When I search for a supermoon illuminating darkness, I recall your howling in ecstasy at a huge harvest moon, dancing across sky, astonishing you as if you were a traveler from another world and had never seen a moon so large. When I see an ultra-bright star twinkling above treetops in your grandmother's woods, I speak to you aloud, remembering the night we said goodbye on her driveway, our last hug, our last kiss, when I wished you safe travels and already longed for your return. Tonight, as I stand on that driveway looking up at a full moon, for a moment, I can convince myself you are with me as I devote myself to a future of looking upward at moon and stars and you as I imagine your return, your hug, and your kiss. This poem includes a couple of lines from Tomas Transtromer's The Half-Finished Heaven, translated by Robert Bly. The lines are, "Even the ghosts take a drink," and "Water glitters between the trees." But it's a poem in conversation with one of Alexandra's poems she wrote and read frequently when she started as Poet Laureate of Prince William County, along with Robert Scott. The two of them were selected together. And so this poem mentions that poem, which was called Around the Yellow House. And this is called The River. At the Yellow House on West 29th, in the year she read Tomas Transtromer, Sweden's Nobel laureate, the college girl, my daughter, discovered the spring on her running trail along the James Buttermilk Trail near Riverside Drive, where she carried glass jugs in her backpack to collect cool, clear water from Buttermilk Spring, a historic site near Canoe Run Park and Canal Lock Ruins, where workers stored dairy, milk, butter, buttermilk to deliver throughout Richmond. Images as fresh as spring water populated Transtromer's poems, images as fresh as fish pulled from the James, as fresh as the great blue heron standing statuesque in a twisted yoga pose on shore, until the moment of flight, soaring low over mirrored water, darting up to tree canopy. River creatures comforted the college girl by reminding her of home beside a river, the dammed up Occoquan River. Transtromer's poems consoled her at a time when a concussion challenged intellect but sparked creativity, a painting frenzy until the walls of the Yellow House were covered in art. I never joined her on this river run, but today I trace her steps. Imagine the rush of spring water, the sound of life crashing out from a natural tap. Taste the refreshing snap of her spirit as I swallow. Once, Transtromer found his way into my writer daughter's poem, but she revised him away. Each time I read the new version, I missed him there. Perhaps it was the reversal, a daughter introducing her mother teacher to a new poet. I wanted to honor him, to remember him inside a poem, to recall what she'd given me, the half-finished heaven. So I wrote my own poem, beginning at the same Yellow House, where she lived only 1 year. Now, more than 4 years have passed since she joined Transtromer, where even the ghosts take a drink, where water glitters between the trees, and I see them together through the window of the river.
That is so powerful. I like so much the way you incorporate Transtromer, who is little known, I think, in America, great Swedish poet, and how that influenced her and how that influences you. So there's a kind of a trilogy there in that poem. And I think that These poems of yours, have they been gathered, the Alexandra poems?
So I've been working on a manuscript, but I need to go back to, like, you know how you kind of do things for a while and then you get distracted by Poetry Society of Virginia activities and that sort of thing. I need to go back to it. Putting these together helped me to go back and, you know, put some in a particular order that I liked so far. So hopefully I'll continue to work on that manuscript.
How many do you have so far?
More than I need for a book, I think, but they're not all of the quality for the book yet.
More than you need. You have been really busy. You haven't wasted grief. You have not wasted grief at all. There's so many things I need to know about you. I've watched you with your Northern Virginia effort of providing contests for students. How many years have you been doing this? So all the Virginia students are eligible to enter this poetry contest, and it is phenomenal. You get some fabulous entries. How many years have you been doing this, and how many students do you think have been touched by this?
So I actually was on the other side of the Poetry Society of Virginia student contest initially, because I was submitting my own, you know, encouraging my own students to submit. But after I retired, I think is when I started to be student contest chair. And I also am working with the Jacqueline Potter Young Poets Competition for the Word Works. So that's something that has been a part of my teaching, especially in creative writing, trying to make sure that students learned that aspect of being a writer, that they needed to submit their work, and making that just a regular habit in my program. And so, I don't know, in terms of the number of students, you know, it's somewhere between 100 and 200 a year probably are involved in that Poetry Society contest, and under 100 in Jacqueline Potter at this point, but still a really remarkable contest.
How many years have you been doing the Virginia contest?
So just I've only been doing that 4 or 5 years.
So we have about 500 students who have had their work read. That's actually pretty significant.
I thank you for being one of the judges.
Well, of course, but if I had had that available when I was 16, it would have really done an awful lot for my self-confidence. Thank you for what you're doing.
And thank you.
There are so many activities we're going to touch on, but I do care about your Greek heritage and how you have kept that alive in language with your mother and grandmother. And I know you've written about that.
Yes, I have. A poem that is mostly about my grandmother, but it's also interestingly about collecting things in my mother's house that inspire me to look back at memories. And so this is a collection of memories that also includes my mother and other female members of the family. And it's called Gathering Notions. And then the next two are more specifically about the Greek heritage.
Well, give us all three and set each one up.
Okay. All right. So Gathering Notions focuses on my maternal grandmother, and it literally was inspired by a bag of notions in my mother's closet.
Another writing lesson. Another writing lesson.
Gathering Notions. A grandmother's spirit tied up in a bag of tangled sewing notions. Towering spools of thread, cones of pink, a daughter's favorite, brittle now, shredded and shrayed. Zippers, yellow, orange, green, colors of another era, zipped closed. Bias seam tape, stretched in curves, making its way around circle hems, asymmetrical facings. Yellow rickrack in an unopened package, zigzags calling out to decorate textile art or fashion. Drawing descendants to her kitchen, whirring sounds whispered by her black and gold singer. Her daughter's favorite plaid skirt, a Campbell dress tartan, each parallel line matching at the seams. a spectacle of aunts and cousins, yellow floral dresses, flashing style across the boardwalk of Point Pleasant Beach. Alterations with a sister, new sleeve from the hem for a wedding gown worn 27 years apart by daughter and granddaughter. Passions passed through families, notions and threads of inheritance, stitches of love, tethering lives. So even though that doesn't directly relate to Greek heritage, the importance of family is huge in Greek culture.
With you, more than anyone, also, you really are devotional.
Thank you.
And it comes through your work. And I know you have more to tell us.
I have across continents, also about my maternal grandmother. And you learn a little bit about her history. She was a refugee and came to the United States after 1922. Across continents. Oh, and she's from New Jersey, Grace. I mean, she lived in New Jersey. So this starts in Montclair, New Jersey, and then goes to Asia Minor and comes back. Across continents. Standing on the gray wooden back porch, just outside her kitchen door, she bends to pull a wet undershirt from a frayed wicker basket, clipping one sleeve, then the other, to the line with old-fashioned clothespins, the ones little girls decorate to make dolls, drawing faces on knobs, adding gingham for dresses, yarn for hair. She pushes the line out, the rusty pulley screeching, to make room for another wet garment. Routinely, she performs her chore, gazing out into the backyard, eyeing pears on the tallest tree, wondering when the fruit will ripen for picking. She'll wrap each treasured pear in a page of newspaper to place in the frigidaire in her cellar for weeks ahead. One clothespin after another connects her family's wash to the line, reaching a syncopated rhythm of screeches and slides, followed by a beat of silence before she pushes the line out again, extending hanging clothes like party decorations across the yard to the back fence where grapevines climb. Large leaves protecting clusters of round green grapes with hints of pink. She repeats the ritual with pride, perhaps remembering an idyllic childhood in the ancient world where she clipped a line of pants her father dyed, dripping blue into the soil, the blue of the Aegean, the blue of the Greek flag, each drop beating up, then bleeding through the Asia Minor soil of her youth. Before the population exchange, before living as a refugee in Chios, before crossing the ocean in steerage to reach a land of prosperity and promise, before fathers, uncles, husbands marched to their deaths, before aunts and sisters rubbed faces with ash and dirt, a disguise to avoid atrocities performed by men, to escape an enemy who was once a friend, who shared a sun-soaked countryside where sheep and goats grazed beside stone houses that faced a harbor filled with pastel fishing boats, surrounded by white pebbled beaches where grapevines crisscrossed hillsides, providing sweet fruit and dry wine for shared meals and celebrations. She returns to the wooden porch, her reverie interrupted as she removes the last garment she clipped to the line, folds it with neat creases, places it in the wicker basket. As she reaches up, anticipating slides and screeches, she pulls the line toward her to release the next clean shirt. The syncopated rhythm in reverse serenades her as the fresh scent of clean laundry wafts in the breeze, reconnecting her with her place of peace.
Kathy Haley, that is your Ars Poetica. I just want to take that apart. I want people to know how to write a poem. The poet notices. The poet notices the littlest act, hanging laundry. Who would think that was subject for a poem? The poet notices the syncopation and the rhythm of each thing the subject of the poem does. And then to cross back and forth across time, to insert that in the poem is to make a center for the poem where it can fan out again. So you have a perfect pattern, almost like a bow, where she's in Montclair, New Jersey, then the insertion, you go back in time, then you come back to New Jersey. That is really a well-made poem.
And thank you so much.
We learn from you.
Thank you, Grace. I will say that that's a poem that was written over time, and it started at the Northern Virginia Writing Project Summer Institute, where Kathy Smaltz was leading a workshop. And the beginnings of that laundry aspect of the poem began there. But it was later, you know, that it developed into crossing continents and time.
Yes. And so we would like even more.
So with that background, it might not be surprising that when Russia invaded Ukraine, that I saw echoes of that historical period in the, you know, time in February when Russia invaded Ukraine, because the cultures are so tied. The way the Greeks and the Turkish people and the Armenians, and, you know, whether they were Muslim or Christian, it didn't matter. They were all living in peace until they weren't. And I feel like that was just echoing in my mind as I was watching the news. And now I feel like it echoes again with what's happening in the Middle East.
Kathy, to hark back to the Greek at war, they were at war with the Turks, right?
So this was after the, you know, Greek independence from the Turks earlier on. But it's when Ataturk decided to make a Turkish state. And
exactly.
I'm not a historian, but at that time, their idea of making a Turkish state excluded all these other cultures that were at one point living in peace there.
Yes, I know someone with a Greek heritage who told me that the Turks would actually come house to house and just say, get out of your house and just occupy your house.
And that kind of happened all of a sudden after, you know, times when like the Smyrna area, Izmir now, was a flourishing center of cosmopolitan people of all, you know, nations. So,
So the Ukraine thing is certainly resonates, doesn't it?
Yes. So this is called Echoes, and it's a villanelle, which has repeated lines, and you'll hear. And I have it just under the title 1922 to 2022. So it was also in the time that it had been 100 years since that event when Russia invaded Ukraine. So, and this I wrote for Arlington Poets in Solidarity with Ukraine, which was a reading that Holly Karapetkova, the poet laureate of Arlington, put together. We read at the Shirlington Library. And then Robert Guyron with Javal Press published this commemorative book, he called it, with everybody
blue and gold, blue and
gold. And it includes some Ukrainian poets as well. All right. Echoes. Attacked by people once loved, now abhorred. Families flee, homelands in disarray. I hear echoes in the language of war. My people expelled from Asia Minor, vying for space in small boats to escape. Attacked by people once loved, then abhorred. Refugees fled toward the Asian shore, towards the Aegean shore. Fires ablaze, spreading along Smyrna's quay. I hear echoes in the language of war. Putin, heralding historical lore, unleashes wrath and terror in Ukraine. Attacked by people once loved, now abhorred. A tide of crimes, rape, genocide, torture, civilian strikes on churches, schools, railways. I hear echoes in the language of war. Peaceful coexistence, friendly rapport, shattered, though bloodlines remain interlaced. Attacked by people once loved, then abhorred, I hear echoes in the language of war.
Mm.
And just to say, you know, it's the politics and the war that creates this schism. It's not the way the people feel about each other. And, you know, I've learned more and more about that over time. But when the people who were expelled from Greece and Turkey, the exchange of populations went back, they were treated, you know, as family by the other culture. But the politics of it, you know, causes this, you know, this feeling of abhorrence.
Good point. Good point, Kathy. You know, there is so much that you have to say, which connects the past to the present. I want to veer off a little bit to say what you're doing, talking about the present in your own state of Virginia, because you have commemorated something very interesting. You bring together poets laureate from all over, from every state that you can find. And this gathering of poets is, I think, an annual event. So tell us a little bit about that organization, because it culminates, I think, in a book. And then it brings people that I have just talked to over the phone or by Zoom and have never met before.
So we've actually done it each 2 years, and it's such a big planning that 2 years is enough. But I just say that June Forte was the one that started the Prince William Poet Laureate program, and she inspired the first in the company of laureates. And then I took over with Alice Mergler to make it continue to happen each 2 years after that. And I think this was the first year that the Local Gems Press created the book Circling with Poets Laureate. But then there was another book of laureates that had occurred, I think, maybe 2 years before. So
what happens? Really nice to happen. What happens during this festival?
It's basically a reading. Sometimes we have workshops and panel discussions, that sort of thing. But every poet laureate that we can invite to come in will have a few minutes to read on stage. And I think what they enjoy most, although that's important to them, is actually getting to talk to each other. And you know, like you were saying, you might know of someone, you might have talked to them on the phone or been part of a Zoom reading, but you haven't necessarily made that personal connection. And some of the people who came to the earliest ones, I feel like are close friends now. And that's really a special thing, especially when they're out of state.
Putting people together is what you do. So let's continue. And okay. What would you like to read now?
So now I'm going to read an ekphrastic poem from I've done a lot of work with partnerships or collaborations. And this is a collaboration, David Anthony Sam, who's the North Central Vice President of Poetry Society of Virginia, inspired. He gathered artists and poets, and we exchanged work to inspire, you know, something in our genres or media. And this is a poem on display in a gallery or art center in Orange, Virginia. I haven't seen the show yet, but on Saturday, the poets gathered to read.
What was the painting?
So the painting is called Once in a Blue Moon, and it's by Trish Crow. But it's actually a painting of flowers that I interpreted to be bluebells. I have a black and white version of it here, but it's not as you know, pretty as it is with the blue and white and green. It's titled Ode to Nature's Blue. Like a Calder mobile, bluebells dangle from arched vines of violet. The bluest bells step out to dance, dwarfing white wallflowers. Topaz tutus sway in aerial ballet, accompanied by birdsong. Like a blue moon, rare gems soar, tanzanite, sapphire, turquoise. Bells chime, their blue charm twirling in the breeze, leaving leaves of citrine and emerald embellishing backdrop.
You have combined art and language in more than one way, and I happen to know about something you host called Where Art Meets the Line, and that is on Zoom now.
Yes, I have taken some time away from it recently. I've just been so busy also with Virginia Voices, which is a monthly reading for Poetry Society of Virginia, but Where Art Meets the Line is for anyone who works with both some kind of visual art or other art like music or dance and connects their poetry, personally written poetry, with art that they also create. So if you do both, then I invite people to come in and share. And it's such an interesting idea to, just seeing how people integrate art and writing. It's different for each person.
And as we can hear, there are many of you. You must have cloned many Kathy Haleys to be doing all these things, but your work and your writing is preeminent. And that is the thing that will sustain us for a very long time. So give us a final piece of work.
So for the final poem, I thought I'd read one of Alexandra's that's going to be published in the chapbook Interstate Lines, which will come out probably next month. Her chapbook it has numbered poems. They don't have titles. This is number 16. I hope you see the sunrise, and I hope you look right into its climbing fire, because there's a chunk of morning when that's more than okay. I hope you take advantage of the moment. Stop to sit on the fence and watch houses paint watercolor portraits across the pond's surface. And I hope you always catch a glimpse of the cattails blooming like white linen in autumn when the moment presents itself.
The voice of Kathy Haley, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Our program is produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Snippet Fund, the Rivada Foundation, the Anne Arundel Council for the Arts, Natalie Canavore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.